Are you a 3PL spending more time and money than you'd like recruiting and onboarding logistics roles? Then it's time to check out Rapido Solutions Group, the leaders in nearshore logistics staffing. Located right next door in Mexico, they have access to the freight talent you need. From carrier sales to tracking and tracing and everything in between, they can do the heavy lifting for you. So if you're ready to get your time back and want to move fast, check out Rapido Solutions Group. Visit gorapido.com to get started today. Hello, and welcome to the Bootstrapper's Guide to Logistics, the podcast highlighting founders doing it the way that doesn't get a lot of attention. We're here to change that by sharing their stories and inspiring others to take the leap.
It's a roller coaster ride. You might ultimately fail.
That's when I kind of knew I was on to something.
It was very hard.
It truly is building a legacy.
The more life you live, the more wisdom you have.
Because we are where we're supposed to be, kind of answering the call.
Don't shoulder entrepreneurship on your own.
I'm your host, Nate Schutz. Let's build something together from the ground up. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Bootstrapper's Guide to Logistics. This week, we're going to go deep with Mike Fulham, who's the founder and CEO of not one, but two companies, Toggle and Quickscope. And aside from running a handful of companies, we've also shared some history at some of the same places in the industry. So I want to unpack all of it with you today, Mike. How am I finding you today? What's going on in your world?
Friday. And, you know, I have a babysitter tonight, so me and the wife are going to get out, probably go get some dinner, some drinks, and go wild till about 8 p.m. and then pass out.
That's the life of parenthood, isn't it?
Yeah. But I look forward to these days, just some peace and quiet, even if it's just a couple hours, you know?
Let's just go right there then. Tell me about your family.
So I have my son, Santino. He's 4. I have my daughter, Cheska. Francesca is her full name. She'll be 2 on the 21st of March. So I have my hands full. And then my wife, Amy. So it's fun, but it's exhausting. I think all 4 of us were in the bed last night and it's no sleep. You know how it is.
So being parents of young kids is exhausting enough already. How are you doing full-time entrepreneurship on top of all of that? And your wife must be a saint.
Yeah, she is. For sure, she is. But it's give and take, you know. I had spent a lot of time in the corporate world, traveling relentlessly, at times 150, 200 days a year. So I may be working more hours and it might be more of a grind as an entrepreneur. I definitely get to spend more time with them because I have a little bit more control of my schedule. I don't have to travel or bounce around as much. So it's a little give and take. You know, I would say overall, family life's a little better as an entrepreneur, believe it or not.
Well, that is maybe more of a reflection of where you came from than what you're doing now. I mean, 150 days a year on the road is, you're a true road warrior. And that's usually a sign that you've kind of, quote, made it in the corporate world. Not that that's the sign, but to have that level of responsibility and impact that requires that you do that. What was the first chapter of your career like?
I was at C.H. Robinson for a little over 10 years. And back then, this is 2008, we had started kind of in a rotational role where you get to experience every job function. So I started in logistics operations, and that led quickly to booking trucks and developing relationships with carriers. And then I started managing accounts. Once I got a feel for all of that, I started shifting more towards the customer-facing side of the industry. Ended up doing that for about 5 or 6 years, either large strategic account management, and then that evolved into outside sales. Pretty much selling every mode and service that we had and kind of connecting the dots between those modes and services to add value to the customer. So when I left there, I was managing a sales team that sold the enterprise service portfolio in Latin America, the US, and Canada. And it was great. You know, I had learned a ton, but I wanted to get a little bit away from strictly sales and get more involved in holistic business strategy.
Strategy is the word that just jumped out at me as you were describing your path of first become knowledgeable in a bunch of disciplines and then wrap all of them together and serve up a buffet of options to clients, and because you're seeing the whole picture. And that is one of the benefits of working in a large organization like CH that has all of those services and a global presence. But aside from just the travel, it does come with some downsides. I mean, the pressure, a large organization, a public company. What were the parts that you were just, aside from travel, I'm ready to be done with this, and I know it's time to go do something new?
When you get to a certain level, you have to be politically strong. And it's just not who I am, you know? It's just not who I am. I think the larger the corporation, the more of your time is spent looking internally at the organization, at the people leading the organization, connecting the dots, building teams, and not so much looking outside at the industry and where it's headed and how you need to adapt to it. I'm definitely better looking at the industry and seeing where it's headed, being creative, networking, rather than looking internally. I think I may not have realized that until I became an entrepreneur, to be honest. I knew that I wasn't. Listen, C.H. Robinson was awesome. The people there were great. The mentors I got there, I still talk to. And I don't know that I could have started in a place that would have been better off for me, period. But there was a point where, you know, I needed to spread my wings, if you would. And I did. And I think now a lot of those learnings, you start to realize how much it mattered, but also some of the things maybe that weren't so good for you come to light in an entrepreneurial role. And I'm still learning a ton about being an entrepreneur and about myself. But I think this is the difference, being focused externally more so than internally.
That may be the best summation of why Robinson is having the challenges that they are today. I wish them nothing but success, but I agree with your assessment. It became more about what was going on inside the company and how do you navigate it versus how do you add value to customers. And they seem to have lost their way, and they have hard times ahead. There's no doubt about it. And it's disappointing in a sense, because the curious folks like yourself that were looking outward were the ones that didn't get airtime or weren't heard, because the focus was so much on navigating the organization. And that is a uniquely large corporation phenomenon. Robinson is no different than other companies that have gone through that same, you get to 5 billion and then 10 billion. Those things naturally happen unless there is a really strong leader at the top who is constantly pushing the organization to not become self-obsessive and instead be customer obsessive or anything else. And so I feel a special affinity towards you, because I shared a lot of those same experiences myself, and I knew it was eventually time to move on. And yet the hardest part for me was the relationships. I had some strong mentors, people that I still talk to this day.
Yeah.
I'm sure we share a bunch of them in common. So who are the unsung heroes that guided you along that you want to say thanks to?
Oh, Dave Mosteller, number one. Just, you know, you talk about individuals in the corporate world that, I mean, some people may not know this, but when you're in the corporate sector and you start climbing up the ladder, big corporations, there's a lot that they ask of you from a personal development standpoint. You know, there's all different types of assessments, whether they be psychological or skill-based, that you have to go through, trainings that you have to go to, just a constant emphasis on personal development. And it's hard if you do it right. And that was one of the best things about Robinson's personal development and the patience they had with young punks like me. Dave was one of them. But what made Dave especially special in my eyes is, like, he didn't just go into a cocoon and become a butterfly one day. He works at it. He really has developed himself. And when he makes a commitment, he means it and he does it. He's not one of those corporate people that just kind of show or act as if change was made. He means it and he does it. And there's probably few people in the world I respect as much as him. I still talk to him. Another big mentor is on my team now, Alex. He's the one that hired me. He's a huge mentor. That's why I'm still working with him now. I'd say it's more of a big brother, little brother relationship.
Sure.
You know, Mike Ralston was awesome. I think you know Mike.
I just chatted with Mike a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, he's a special guy. He's a special guy, especially when it comes to leadership. I think he taught me a lot about what it means to be a leader. He was great. Bob Biesterfeld. I always looked up to him. Always. He was just kind of aggressive in his approach. But at the same time, you know, he let data lead the way, which you don't typically see someone that's hyper aggressive, not leading with emotion. I thought he did a good job there. I always looked up to him. There's tons of people there. A lot of them are gone now, unfortunately, but those people come to mind.
So then you go through that crucible of an experience. You gain a ton of industry knowledge, leadership development, but you also have this huge structure behind you when you're going out and selling something to a customer. Yeah. Now you're an entrepreneur and it's just Mike and there's and a couple of co-founders and a service and nobody's ever heard of you. What was the transition of leaving that into being totally alone, exposed? There is no product. How did you adapt?
We'll be right back.
Have you heard about Bitfreighter and the EDI revolution? Bitfreighter helps companies automate communication with their freight partners through unlimited messaging and quoting. Traditional providers can't say that. The Bitfreighter team is also available 24/7 and responds immediately by phone, email, or yes, even text. Legacy providers can't say that either. So if you want to scale your operations to save time and money, come join the EDI revolution with us. Visit bitfreighter.com to get started today.
So probably not what you would expect, but I was much more comfortable there than I think I thought I would have been. And I'll take you back to Dave and Bob and Mike Ralston. We were at a leadership camp and we knew that we had to create new business, not just grow existing business. And Bob had made a recommendation that I create a sales team, an outside sales team. And at the time, you know, I didn't have a lot of confidence in it. I was like, wait a minute, start with nothing, create something and be held accountable to it. When we're already a huge company and it just felt like there was no more businesses to sell, I straight looked at them. I was like, no, heck no. I used stronger language, but they pushed me to do it. And that first year of doing it was brutal. I mean, it was pound your head against the wall, constantly being told no. You start to get a tremendous amount of doubt in what you're doing and the ability to be successful. And I think cutting my teeth there gave me the I don't know if it's the right word, fortitude to kind of deal with being an entrepreneur. So when I stepped into the entrepreneurial world, I had expected a lot of that and my tolerance for it was built up. Then it was more so about being strategic, trying to find avenues to create value, creating strong partnerships, being a good evaluator of people to trust or not trust, the different layers of trust that you should probably get to with different individuals. So I was able to focus a little bit more on the doing and not so much the thinking and overthinking and you know, if you haven't spent time in outside sales, a lot of people, especially in this industry, say they've been in outside sales, but they've been given an account and they've been told to develop a relationship and upsell. That is not outside sales.
Sure.
It's not outside sales. That is not what a cold call is. If you spend time there, you will be better for it. And that time period was probably the most developmental time that I had, and it really helped.
A lot of folks would say that they leave the corporate world unequipped for entrepreneurship because of those, the transformation is so large. But C.H. Robinson has also spun off more entrepreneurs per capita. I don't know the percentage, I'm making that up, but it's in the universe that I engage in with entrepreneurs, you can't throw a rock without hitting somebody who started a logistics business after leaving Robinson. And so they're maybe the mothership that spawned all of these entrepreneurs out there, and a lot of whom are having success. But you don't have tools, you don't have a team, you got to build all that. And one of the parts is you got to come up with a name. It's maybe the one decision that entrepreneurs don't admit, but they obsess about what they're going to call their company. How did you come up with Togo for your first one?
So real quick, I did not go into the entrepreneurial world directly from CH. I had a stint with a company called ReTMS. It's now Werner.
Oh, but sure, yeah.
Asset-based and brokerage firm, but private, family-owned. I learned a lot from the Reeds on how to be an entrepreneur, to be in the private sector. When you don't have tools, go find them, you know? Well, Robinson, they teach you how to strategize. They over-strategize, and they probably have done that to a fault at this point. But when you combine the understanding of how the Reeds became successful in the private world, and you combine that with the strategizing and kind of the thoughtful approach to business that C.H. Robinson applies, it was a really, really good foundation. I'm still learning. I've made a trillion mistakes, but those were the foundational elements. So back to the name though, Togo wasn't the original name. The original name was actually Sand Table, but as we started progressing and kind of figuring out who we wanted to be, the name didn't quite align, and we had brought on some additional partners and at that point had customers and started to really figure out what we wanted to do with our experience. And I think the reason that we chose Togo is, I'm sure you've heard of Balto, right? He was the sled dog. Well, Balto's the one that gets a lot of the credit. But Togo did a good bit of that race. In fact, arguably the most important parts of that race to make Balto get to the end and be successful. So at Togo, we want to be a resource group, a supply chain resource group for our customers. Kind of in the scenes. We'll be the hero behind the scenes, and we'll follow your direction. That's why one of our taglines is, you hold the reins, we'll pull the sled. And we have no problem, you know, doing the work and being the unsung hero, if you will.
It's such a humble approach, and maybe that's the attraction of why I think the bootstrappers crowd is going to love your story is... Bootstrapping is all about being the unsung hero. You're not looking for attention. You don't need the glory. You just want to deliver a good result day in and day out. Do something for the long term and know that it's going to be meaningful for not only your customers, but for your family, for all the families of the people that work inside the organization. And it's not sexy, but it's durable and it's long lasting and it means something. Not that there's anything wrong with taking outside funding or, you know, being a venture-backed company. It's just a different ethos. And for someone as self-aware as you, which may be one of your defining...
My wife would disagree.
That's a different podcast. We'll do a spin-off show on that one. On the what it's like being married to an entrepreneur. Maybe we could have a whole series just on that. But maybe that is one of your defining characteristics that I'm picking up on from you is you're willing to do the hard work, whether it gets attention or not. And I just want to give you a pat on the back for that, because I know you won't do it yourself. And it's great to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting just period. I mean, just being a part of Ballast, you kind of, you get to really appreciate other people in a different light. because in a way they're competitors. And in certain arenas like the corporate sector, maybe you're at a trade show, when you're interacting with competitors, it's really hard to perceive them outside of being a competitor or someone that's going to take your business or take your customer or that you have to beat. But in Ballast, we're helping each other. So you get to see other people in their journey and where they're at. And I see that a lot in other people too, is, you know, just level of self-awareness, humility. It seems like if you've spent any time in the entrepreneurial world, especially as a bootstrapper, you know, you developed a different level of humility than you probably would not have if you hadn't gone down the entrepreneurial route. And you get to see that even in the accomplished ones in our group. And that's something to look up to, because I think myself and our team, we would not consider ourselves successful yet. We have not reached our goal. But when we do, you know, we want to be the same people.
And you want to celebrate it with people that know what it took to get there. And and thank you for the endorsement of Ballast. It is it's not for everybody. We don't want the folks in the group that have big egos and want to impress other people. We want people that are willing to help other people, even if they're in the same space. The industry is so large. The chances of you stealing business from another member is so low, but the benefits of working alongside somebody and, you know, following in their footsteps so that you don't make the same mistake they made at a certain stage in their own journey, that is the economic and business value of belonging to a group of other peers that want to see you win. And again, it's not for everybody. There's a small fraction of the industry's entrepreneurs that fit that mold. You're one of them. And I'm glad that you see the value in belonging to something like that with people who share the same values. And now you're applying the learnings from your first business and you've launched another one, QuickScope. What's QuickScope all about?
Yeah, so Togo is really a family of companies. We have Togo Technologies, and then we have Togo Supply Chain Resource Group. So our customers are generally 3PLs, transportation brokers, warehouses. And the way that we provide services to them might be connecting or executing or consulting different aspects of the supply chain. And being from the brokerage space, we were well aware of the fraud issue. It's always existed, but I would say, you know, over the past 5 years, it's gotten really, really bad. Things like identity theft, false identities, cargo theft, double brokerage, the stuff that these 3PLs are experiencing is really bad. And what the carriers are experiencing is really bad, because the carriers, the good ones, might not be paid for work that they performed. And the brokers might have to pay twice. They might lose a customer, or a shipper might lose product because it's been caught up in this fraudulent world that brokerage has become. So there's been some work to clean that up. Some companies have done a really good job, Carrier Shore, Go Highway. They've all done a good job increasing the standards and increasing the methods of how carriers are onboard and vetted before they're utilized by a broker. And we thought that what the industry needed to really secure the chain of custody and brokerage was a tool that could be deployed at the load level that would work in conjunction with a trucker tools or in conjunction with a Carrier Shore, Go Highway, or any vetting tool. Because the vetting does a good job of cleaning up the data, and the tracking does a good job making sure you know where the truck is, but it's still not enough to make sure that the chain of custody is secure. So the way QuickScope works is it's a load level tool that can be deployed. It's not a tracking tool. It's not a vetting tool. It's applied to the load before it's picked up. It withholds critical information like pickup information, and it requires the driver to go through a verification process near the shipper to obtain the pickup information. And if they clear the verification, obviously the broker has already been verified. because they're receiving the QuickScope order from the broker. But once they pass that verification, they get the pickup information, and that will progress throughout a load, multi-pick, multi-drop. Throughout transit, they can perform a verified update. So again, it's not a tracking tool, but at any moment in time, they can perform a verified update where we're getting visuals, geo-tracked locations, and pictures and things like that to make sure that the verification happens. And then we can perform it again prior to delivery. So at any point in time, if product or trucks are changing hands, prior to delivery, you're going to know who's delivering it to make sure you're paying the right person. And if you're a carrier that is victim to double brokerage, you know that you got to go to the right person to get paid. And then we could always identify who the bad actor actually was and report it. In addition to that, there's some things that create some ease for the driver and the broker to collect materials and documents along the way. But it's a tool designed to be used transactionally. It should help when things get tight. It should help if you're a fan of load boards and utilizing them. But it's a tool that we really think can make an impact on the market and protect the carrier without them being kind of diluted with the vetting tools, protect the broker, and give the shipper a sense of control when they do use 3PLs.
That's brilliant. How did you take it from idea to, you know, an MVP and then actually build software on top of that? Because you're not a technologist, are you?
No. No, couldn't know less about technology. So we had a lot of ideas, probably too many ideas. And I think the biggest hang up for us was we had Togo Supply Chain Group doing well. We were doing really well with the consulting. We had some runway to lean into that. And it was, okay, if we're going to dig into technology, it kind of has to align with the customer base and the value we're bringing to those customers already. Kind of had to be an easy latch on, right? So we had a ton of ideas on what different tech the logistics market needed, but this issue just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it just kind of kept punching us in the face till we said, all right, we have customers right now asking us to fix this and to consult on their behalf and help them fix this. So we leaned into that specific function and we said, all right, we're going to go out. We're going to hire some people that know what they're doing to create the basic infrastructure to attack load level protection against fraud and double brokerage. And build the platform in a way that those future concepts and those future ideas that add value to those same stakeholders and kind of latch on to what our organizational vision is can be easily added on after we've gained some scale. And that's the point we're at right now, as we're starting to onboard more and more customers. And I think it's giving them more confidence to expand their carrier base, to move quickly like a lot of brokers do, to leverage the load boards. And then we'll later introduce that new functionality that can also add value to those same stakeholders. So though we were stepping out into the tech space, which we're all uncomfortable with, we knew that it already aligned with our customers and the value we're bringing them, and that we could hire professionals to make our vision come to life. And those two things were really what put us over the edge, because we talked about it a lot.
One of the critical mistakes that I see early or first-time founders make when they get obsessed with an idea is to build the solution first and then go try to find customers who have that problem. And it sounds like you did the exact opposite. You had an idea of where to focus, but you let the customers dictate what you actually built. So what advice, I mean, that critical distinction of customer-led growth and even customer-led product development is a, if you're listening and you're building technology right now and you don't have a beta customer lined up for it, go get one before you spend any more money on building the technology. You might have a brilliant solution, but if no one's willing to pay for it, it's not viable. And I see too often founders reach out to me online and say, hey, I'm struggling to grow sales. Can we jump on a call? I'd love your insight on something. And we have a 10-minute call, and I realize instantly they haven't talked to anybody.
Yeah.
They've been building in isolation. And I say, stop, don't spend another nickel on software. development until you talk to customers? How many times a week are you getting in front of your ideal customer profile and asking them how big of a problem it is and how valuable would it be if you solved it for them? And if that potential customer is not thrilled about the possibility of your solution, either find somebody who is or adapt. And so it's just such a crucial inflection point for bootstrapped companies, especially that are building software, to get right. Are there any other insights that you would add to that on what you would maybe do differently if you could do it all over again, or advice for other first-time founders?
I think we fell a little bit victim to knowing too much about how our customers operate. So not just by, I got some really good advice in the Ballast group that was just, if you're building a software, don't wait too long to start the feedback loop. Meaning getting customers to test it out and acquiring real feedback and then adjusting based on that feedback. I think we fell victim to knowing a little bit too much to say that, no, this function has to be exactly like this and it has to do this too. And if they're set up in this way, if they're broken out by zone or if they're broken out by mode or equipment type, or if they're not decentralized, or if they are decentralized, or if they're using this platform, it was endless. You could just keep going and going and going. Eventually, you just have to say, stop, create the feedback loop, and then develop it with actionable intel. I wish we had made that move a little bit sooner, but that was a big learning.
It's also, I love that insight, though, of knowing too much. Because it's not arrogance that can seep into that over time. Maybe that we know better than the customer, but it's assumptions built on top of assumptions based on your own experiences, and the buyer of that technology might share some of them, but they might also feel like, why are you telling me how I should do my job? I'm pretty sure I know, you know, my function pretty well, or what have you. And so it's a fine blend of, yeah, you need to have conviction for sure. But conviction without that feedback loop, you could just completely be going down the wrong path. And there's a lot to unpack there. I'm glad that you found that insight early enough to adjust, and now you're having success. What would you envision QuickScope becomes now that you've got traction, you've got paying customers, you're going to market. You hinted at a couple of other features that might be happening down the road, but do you have a grand vision that you can share?
Yeah. I mean, right now we really want to start creating more accountability within the transaction between a broker and a carrier. That's number one, more accountability. That if you are a broker that uses QuickScope and you're a carrier that works with a broker that deploys tenders on QuickScope, you know that there's a degree of safety that doesn't exist elsewhere in the market. But also, the technology is not meant to exclusively protect the broker or exclusively protect the carrier. It's meant to create a more trusted engagement on the transactional level. So what other things make the transaction difficult? Is brokerage and trucking in general, it's struggling right now, and it might continue to consolidate for a while. I don't know that this is a traditional cycle. We could argue that all day. I would say it's not. And I think that either the brokers are going to have to reduce margins, carriers are going to have to reduce their profit expectations, they're going to have to become hyper efficient. Or we make some of the things that make it difficult easier. Mm-hmm. Collecting documentation in real time. Maybe when a truck is loading at a shipper that won't let them take pictures, our technology will enable them to do that, or at least notify it more simply. Maybe it's temperature controlled or a controlled substance that the carrier needs to be very certain that they don't load product in a way that could put them at risk or the broker at risk. Maybe the same thing at the receiver. Maybe USDA was called and the product was left out, and you needed to document that through a secure portal in immediate time, not just a phone call. Maybe it's congestion at a shipper that, you know, there's a lot of liability for the warehouse to have these trucks coming in and out. They have workers trying to stage product, and the truck doesn't show up. But there's another truck that's been waiting for 8 hours that could have loaded in place of that. So maybe there's some remote check-in functionality. But we want to make the engagement between brokers and carriers more trusted and streamlined and simple and less adversarial.
I can't wait to see what it becomes.
Me too.
What are the parts of the job that you avoid or that you don't like doing?
The legal stuff.
Okay.
The legal stuff. You know, at this point, I've at least seen most versions of contracts and had to review tons of language. So I'm nowhere near where a lawyer is. But, you know, you get a general sense of these contracts. And I can't stand it. So many words. There's big words. They use big words in different directions and different places.
The King's English. Yep.
And then you got to wait for the lawyer feedback, and then you got to give it back to them. And then I don't enjoy that. I really enjoy, not that, you know, we didn't have a vision at CH, not that we didn't have a vision anywhere in the industry, but it's really cool when you identify how you want to make an impact and being able to at least attempt to make it happen. Like there's a stake we want to put in the ground as a team. And we're rallied around it, and we're on that journey to do it. That's the enjoyable part. When it comes to, you know, processing paperwork and documentation, I could do without it.
Yeah. Last question, going back to the where you came from, to anybody else who's considering entrepreneurship but has the golden handcuffs, what would you say?
Good question. You know, you see a lot of advice out there, especially nowadays on social media. You know, you could just spend some time on YouTube and Instagram and just get flooded with advice. And the amount of conviction these people have behind their advice should be concerning.
Mm.
Because individuals are always different. They're always different. And if somebody's just feeding you advice with that much conviction, you should really think twice. What I would say is, I believe now more than ever that I was always built to be an entrepreneur. If I had done it early in my career, I would have failed by now.
Mm.
No question. If I didn't spend my time at CH, if I didn't spend my time at Reed, I would have failed. Because I needed the group around me. I needed that experience to learn. Could I make an argument that I could have taken the leap a few years earlier? Sure. But I needed it. I'm running into a lot of entrepreneurs that didn't need that at all.
Mm-hmm.
They were great from the start. Now, when they become successful, maybe there's a whole new flood of things that they have to deal with. But I think you have to figure out why you don't want to take the leap. Is it comfort? Or is it because you really don't believe in your vision yet? Figure out what it is and then make it happen. But don't listen to the advice. Should have done it sooner than later. Should have done it later. Should have jumped all in. You're crazy working for the man. No, you're not. Just figure out what's going to make you ready or not ready and make it happen.
That is brilliant advice. That's, you're saying is not advice, but it's actually very, very good advice. I can't wait to see where this thing goes. I've shared parts of your story with a few other people. And just because I know you and we engage regularly, I have a different insight into how you operate. I have no doubt that it's going to be successful, and that as you hit the next milestone and the one after that, that you're uniquely equipped to ride a growth wave, that you'll be able to make the transition from startup to growth company to mature company. And because you've leveled up and continue to develop yourself, that you'll be able to make those transitions when the time comes. I'm also, I've shared QuickScope as a concept with a handful of folks, and they're all excited about it.
Nice.
They see the need. They know the time is now, and nobody else has quite yet put together a solution that does what yours does at the transactional level. So I don't know if you have goals of becoming a unicorn or what those milestones might be, but I think you've got a really, really good shot at it, and we're all rooting for you.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Tell people we're ready to, we're taking on customers now. Do a week free trial. We'll give you a demo. Tell them to come on over.
We're ready. Love it. Good luck on your date tonight as well. I hope you're up at least past 8:30, and we'll catch up again soon.
All right, Nate. I appreciate it as always.
Take care.
See you, bud.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Bootstrapper's Guide to Logistics, and a special thank you to our sponsors and the team behind the scenes who make it all possible. Be sure to like, follow, or subscribe to the podcast to get the latest updates. To learn more about the show and connect with the growing community of entrepreneurs, visit logisticsfounders.com. And of course, thank you to all the founders who trust us to share their stories.